the Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income. We're going to cover a lot of stuff today, in one in particular that plays a major role in your retirement plans, which is Social Security. We'll be talking about it in a case study. We'll be talking about how it can be used to effectively handle some of the bigger issues, let's say taking care of those fixed living expenses when you retire. And we'll also be talking directly with Social Security.
And I'm John Loeffler. Today, the guest on the program will be from Social Security, Yolanda York. We'll be dealing with a host of issues. Number one, there are five important changes to Social Security in 2015, not to mention a windfall elimination regarding Social Security. And the subject, what every woman should know about Social Security, all of that in the later part of today's program.
Today, we're going to address probably one of the greatest fears that you have as you enter into retirement, and that's basically outliving your assets, or basically, simply put, dying broke. It has become much more complex today, especially in the era of financial repression as we are in this country today, where we have 0% interest rates. I mean, we didn't think about this kind of stuff 10 years ago. Back in the year 2000, I could have got 7%, 8% on a bond. I could have got 5% or 6% in a money market fund. Today, well, you get zero. Not to mention the fact that we've had two bear markets and one bear market in housing, the first that we've seen in nearly half a century. And the investment returns have been less predictable. So planning to outlive your assets is a very big issue today, and it's even harder to plan for. But if you do have a plan, you can address it.
Well, one trend, as you see it in many of the newspapers like the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post, people are postponing their retirement and working longer. It seems like retirement isn't necessarily the dream anymore. Part-time work for a number of people is now becoming a necessary option, and retirees are looking for ways to combat low returns, something that most people thought they wouldn't have to do. Now, what's added to this problem, if you want to call it a problem, is that people are living longer. You could solve this one by simply dropping dead earlier. But if you don't want to do that, which I don't think most
of you imagine doing a plan. Plan calls for you to die early. Oh, that sounds good.
Die on schedule and don't worry about the plan. So people are having to cope with longer lives, and with longer lives comes the issue of things starting to go wrong slowly, not necessarily things that are terminal, but rather things that need to be dealt with. And you have to cope with the illness and medical bills and things like that. And you add all of this together, thinking that we are retiring longer and having longevity, living longer, and then you have to say, well, will my funds really stretch to the point that I need them to do it? And that's what's putting many retirees in a very uncomfortable retirement situation.
Here's the real tragedy when you think about this. A lot of this can be avoided, John, because proper planning, there's so many options that you have available today. Different Social Security options, as we'll be discussing with Yolanda York. And you're really going to want to listen to this interview because there are going to be some surprising revelations I bet you didn't know about Social Security. And especially if you're the wife who maybe your husband has a larger Social Security benefit, you're really going to want to listen to this. There are things like immediate annuities, delaying retirement, working, investment strategies. I'm amazed, John, that somebody will spend their entire lifetime working, planning for retirement, but when they get there, they don't have a plan. And that, I think, is the biggest tragedy today when you take a look at some of the issues of people actually running into problems of running out of money.
Right, and you could wind up having to retire at an unplanned time because companies are downsizing. And there are corporate mergers, and contrary to what people would like to think about discrimination, companies are preferring younger people rather than older people. It's another one of these ceilings and little secrets that nobody wants to talk about. There's also company restructuring, and as a result, you could find yourself in an unplanned retirement situation. So, knowing that this could happen, it's not something you sit up at night worrying about, but how would you plan for this? How would you solve it?
One of the easiest things to do is you start with a plan. I mean, that's obvious. And it's not just a plan. It's not like, okay, what's the number I need to get to retirement? You really need to think about your retirement in three phases, not just the day you retire, because phase one, and we like to think of retirement as having three phases to it, maybe possibly four when you get into your late 70s and 80s when you're dealing with medical issues. But let's say phase one is pre-retirement. That could be 5 to 10 years before the actual date of retirement. So let's say you want to get your full Social Security benefits at age 56. Phase one might be 10 years prior to that, age 56, or maybe you were fortunate enough to retire early. You got an early buyout, you had stock options, you sold your business, whatever that is. And it's also prior to age 59 and a half when you cannot tap your IRAs without a 10% penalty unless you annuitize it. Phase two begins at age 59 and a half where you can tap into your pension plan, your IRA rollovers. There's no penalties at this point. And then phase three, John, is full retirement age. For most baby boomers, that's when you get full Social Security benefits. You can work and not give up any of your benefits, and that's at age 66. Now, there's definite strategies you need to pursue in each phase and things you should be doing and putting in place in each phase prior to the actual event itself.
Now that we've identified the phase, let's begin with phase one and see what the steps would be that should be taken in order to get ready. This should be, I would say, some pretty common strategies to be employed here.
Well, there is, and I hate to say this, it's a word that nobody likes to think about, and that's a budget. I mean, if you worked in the corporate world, or even if you worked in government, what do entities have, like corporations or even government entities? They have a budget. You know, this year's budget, next year's budget, capital expenditures. You need to know what you're going to be spending when you retire. And that budget needs to be broken up into basic living expenses, because that's really the number you're trying to target. And then, you know, you can always add the desires, like we'd like to travel, I'd like to buy a motor home, capital expenditures somewhere down the line, you're going to be buying a new car. But the most important one is your basic living expenses. And the reason you want to get that number is you want to target that number and make sure it's covered with predictable sources of income. So unless you're Larry Lots of Bucks or Brenda Big Bucks, you know, you need to have a budget. Because without a budget, it's almost impossible to plan. How do you know how much money you're going to need when you start retirement and when you end in retirement?
So besides budget, what else?
You need to look at changing your investment strategy, especially in phase one or maybe phase two, from blue chips versus, let's say, high beta stocks. I mean, you don't want to be putting a lot of money into a Tesla or, you know, a Netflix and hoping that the stock goes up. And you may want to add a small fixed income component, making your portfolio less volatile, more predictable, more secure. So the numbers you're trying to accumulate, you're more likely to realize. And the other thing that you're also going to want to do during this period of time is maximize your tax savings. You're going to want to load up as much money as you can in a 401k program. If you're fortunate enough to work for a company that has a deferred comp program, you're better off putting that bonus in a deferred comp program than having it taxed at your highest marginal tax bracket. If you have personal investments, you're going to want to make sure they're tax deferred, tax sheltered, or tax preferred, like dividends. I mean, let's put it this way. The more that you save on paying taxes, whether it's on your investments or your earned income or business income, that's more bucks in your pocket. It's more assets you're going to have when you retire.
Well, what about corporate and government pension plans? This can be a significant part of your planning, and then we should probably look at Social Security options as well.
Well, I mean, you need to know what your pension options are before you retire. I mean, what happens if all of a sudden your company gets involved in a merger, or we have a downturn in the economy and you're downsized, or maybe the business comes on tougher times because of competition? So you need to know what your options are, and that includes Social Security, as we're going to cover that later on today with my guest, Yolanda York. And you also want to know that for your spouse as well, and you incorporate that into your plan, because remember, the goal in putting together a secure retirement plan, number one, is to target as much as you can of your fixed living expenses with predictable, guaranteed sources of income whenever you can do that. And you really want as much of this taken care of, let's say your living expenses, taken care of by something that's predictable. You don't want to have a fixed budget and have variable income that can fluctuate widely, because how are you going to know how you're going to live? And it may surprise you, folks, but a bond fund is not a predictable source of income. I mean, we often talk about on the weekend program, TLT, which is Treasuries. It's an ETF, very popular, traded and owned, and LQD, which is its corporate equivalent. I mean, 10 years ago in 2004, TLT paid 36 cents a share a month. Today, it's 26 cents a share. LQD paid 44 cents. Today, it's paying 33 cents a share. So over 10 years, the income has fallen 25 to 30%. So how would you like to have a retirement plan where you thought you had your basic expenses covered and find out that every single year over the last 10 years, the income has been dropping? There's a shocker for you.
Well, what about the 4% rule? I mean, the theory was you could take 4% of your principal and withdrawal for the last 25 years of your life. That's just... One problem, when you get to the 25th year, ding, time's up, and you either have to die or you're in trouble. Is this not a valid planning rule any longer? It seemed to have been employed at one point, but it doesn't seem to be working anymore.
You know, it's interesting. The individual that came up with that rule was a financial planner here in California who's actually retired now. And according to him, it doesn't work as much anymore because we're in a zero interest rate environment. Now, when you have 0% interest rates, you can't predict it. I mean, you can't go out and buy a 5, 6% bond and lock it in for a 10, 20-year period as we used to do, and you had a predictable source of income. Not to mention the fact we've had two bear markets, so a lot of people don't have the assets they thought they were going to have. What you're really trying to do in this kind of environment to make sure you don't die broke is... You want to avoid huge drawdowns in capital. And the problem, John, with the 4% rule is between 2000 and 2002, the market lost between 40, 45% or 70% if you want to look at the NASDAQ. And then go forward a couple of years to 2007 and 2009, the market lost another 45%. So what happens when you're drawing 4% of your principal when your principal's down 40% or 45 or even more? That's why you can get yourself in big trouble at big drawdowns. In fact, Wayne Fow, who's a doctor at the American College, took a look at the 4% rule, and he said the only way it works in today's low interest rate environment is a combination of, let's say, fixed immediate annuities mixed in with blue chip stocks for an inflation hedge. But given everything that we've seen, it just doesn't work in today's low interest rate environment, and also the fact that we've had two bear markets.
Let's move on to phase two. Assuming you're now at age 59 and a half, can you now tap into retirement plans without the 10% tax penalty?
Yeah, at age 59 and a half, you can tap into your IRA without having to annuitize it to avoid a penalty. Now, there's various strategies that kind of work here. You can tap into plans and live off the income if you have enough. Let's say you had a large 401k program between you and your spouse or just yourself. You can create your own version of a defined benefit pension plan with an immediate annuity, which is becoming an increasing popular option here, especially in this low interest rate environment. Or maybe you were one of those execs that worked for a corporation. You put your year-end bonus in a deferred compensation plan. These really work nice in phase two of your retirement plan. Or maybe what you do is many people are doing today. You work part-time and you use this part-time work to supplement, let's say, the income that you're getting off your investments. But really what you want to do is you want to try to postpone taking your Social Security until full retirement age, when you can work as much as you want, not get penalized, or if possible, even work to age 70, because then you would get 132% of your retirement benefit. Because after age 66, every year you delay taking Social Security, your benefits go up 8% a year. So phase two is really between age 59 and a half and age 66, between the time you can tap into your 401k programs and IRAs and age 66 when you get full retirement benefits.
So finally, we come to phase three, and here's where you get your full retirement benefits.
Well, this is really a critical area, because when you get Social Security at full retirement age, which is for most boomers is going to be age 66, and then it goes to age 67, I think, for millennials, is that you can get the benefits and you can work and you're not going to get penalized for working. Another one is if wife is age 62 and you are age 66, even if she never worked, she can get 37% of your Social Security benefits, your full Social Security benefits, at age 62. So, you know, there's a number of strategies you can employ, including allowing your Social Security delay taking it to age 70 when you get 132% of your full benefits. So what you're really doing here is using options to defer maximum drawdown of your assets, because where retirees have gotten themselves in trouble is they started out their retirement with immediately maximum drawdowns on their assets. And then, of course, you add in bear markets like we saw in 2000, 2002, or what we saw in 2007, 2009, a downturn in housing, 0% interest rates. I mean, these are the things that really sometimes are unpredictable. So with proper planning, John, you shouldn't have to resort to maximum drawdowns, which is really what you're trying to avoid here. And there's so many options and strategies to employ here. There's no reason you should have to die broke.
Well, it seems to be pretty simple. It's not really rocket science. It's very much like running a business. You have a budget. You monitor the cash flow. You have some capital expenditures that are going to have to be made from time to time. Planning for retirement's pretty much the same thing. And the only variables in there are possibly sources of income based on market pressures or other considerations. And even from time to time, governments can change what they promise they're going to do for you.
Sure. And it really, you know, retirement planning really doesn't stop the day you retire. You put a plan in place and then you're going to monitor it. And it needs to be monitored throughout retirement. I mean, look at the changes we've seen in the last, 14, 15 years. We've seen two bear markets in stocks. We've seen a bear market in real estate. And we've seen ZIRP, or zero interest rate policy, or financial repression employed by the Fed. And there's also different phases. Think of what happens during retirement. Your health could change, family issues come up, the market conditions change. So I guess the best thing you can do is really formulate a budget, formulate a plan, and think of things like, what is it going to cost me to live when I retire? That's a question. Two, where am I going to live? Am I going to keep the house I'm living in now, or are we going to downsize, move someplace else? And if you're going to move someplace else, don't wait to the day you retire to do that. Maybe start going down there on vacations. If you're on the East Coast and you're thinking of going down to Florida, pick a community. Go down there for a winter vacation. Check it out. Check out home prices. Check out facilities like education, medical, all the things that you're going to need as you age. Check that out first. And why not make it a vacation? A big mistake, by the way, is, we're going to move where the kids live. Well, guess what, folks? Kids move. Jobs change. They change, get laid off. They change careers. I was reading, I think, John, the average person today coming out of college can have almost 4 to 5 job changes in their working career. So moving where Junior is living today may not be where Junior is living 10 years from now.
All right, having done this with all three phases here, what would you say is the most important issue? And, you know, when you hit these things head on, sometimes the first tendency is to panic because it seems daunting and overwhelming. But if you break it down into step one, step two, step three, seems easier that way.
I would say it really gets down to basics, putting together a budget and then breaking that budget down into basic living expenses. That's probably the most important number you're going to target in your investment strategies, your pension strategies. Then finding and developing a plan and target as much of that base budget as you possibly can with guaranteed, predictable, and dependable sources of income from a company pension plan, from Social Security, immediate annuity, a fixed income laddered bond portfolio. And once you get that part, the rest of your plan is pretty straightforward and easy. But I would say putting together a budget of basic living expenses and then coming together with the target plan, my basic living budget is $4,000 a month, $3,000 or $5,000 a month, whatever that number is. What predictable sources of income can I count on to live on that $5,000? Is it Social Security? Is it a pension? Is it an immediate annuity? Is it a fixed income portfolio? But you want something that you don't have to blink an eye on. You know it's going to be there. It's not going to change. And it's going to be predictable. It doesn't matter what Ben Bernanke or Janet Yellen's doing or what President Obama's doing. It's going to be there.
Well, I know you talk about budgets quite a bit, and you really can't have a plan without one. The purpose of having not just a budget, but the plan is that ultimately you make better investment decisions. You know what your ideas are, you know what your goals are, and you also have a strategy built into that. So as a result, you're not subject to the whims of the market and tending to get swept along with changes. You know, if you have good dividend stocks, for example, you keep them. You don't jump in or out of things on the basis of a panic. If you need an inflation hedge, you know why you own stocks. You need your base budget paid for, and you need to know why you have an annuity and laddered bonds. But having said all of that, why do you think it is that people don't plan when it seems obvious?
I mean, one of life's obvious problems that we have, procrastination. I'll think about that tomorrow. I'll think about that next year. Oh, maybe it's a New Year's resolution. I mean, same thing applies, John, to investing. How many investors really have an investment philosophy? And then also, I think it's, I call it time creep. I mean, you know, I can't believe, you know, I've been doing retirement planning now for over 3 decades, and I can't believe, you know, it's not too much longer I can get full retirement benefits from Social Security. So time creep is one of them. And then, you know, we don't think about events happening in our life, layoffs, downsizing, corporate mergers, health issues that come up, or the fact that the market and the economy has changed. I mean, look at the events we've experienced in this country over the last, 14 years? Financial crisis, tech bursting, you know, Katrina, Rita, 9/11, 0% interest rates. Who would have ever thought? We used to think, oh, that was something that only happened in Japan. Well, guess what? It's been on our doorstep here now for almost 7 years. So, you know, things change. And what about technology? Look what technology is doing to industries and companies. It's changing. And here's the sad fact. Only 20% of Americans have a retirement plan. There is no reason, folks, that you should die broke. You have so many options, so many alternatives to consider. And, you know, there's bound to be one that you and your spouse find that works for both of you. It's just a matter of sitting down and formulating and putting together a plan. Wouldn't you rather have a plan and know where you're going rather than be surprised or have life take you by surprise with, you know, a sudden corporate merger and you find out you're out of a job, or we have a bear market like we did in 2007 to 2009, or interest rates go to zero, which you never thought would have been possible? It's much better if you have a plan.
So reviewing what we've just covered here, your retirement planning goes through 3 phases. Phase 1, early retirement. This is something like 5 to 10 years before. Phase 2, between age 59 and a half and 65, you can tap into some of your plans. And then phase 3, full retirement at age 66 and acquisition of Social Security. So you start with a budget, which determines your fixed living expenses. You target those expenses with guaranteed income or dependable instruments like pensions, Social Security, annuities, and other fixed income. And then you use your options to minimize an early drawdown and possibly, say, work part-time to delay having to do that, so you have some cash flow coming in from your work. Besides, it gives you something to do. I mean, what are you going to do? Sit around and watch TV all day? You know,
I get bored.
Yeah, I would too. I really would. I'm just not the type to do that, you know? You want a little more free time, but I just can't not work. I just love doing it. And so you also need to factor inflation. And then if you can, plan for some of the unplannables, but you know, that's life. You can't do all of those. So let's illustrate these points in today's case study. As with all of our case studies, it involves real people for whom Jim devised solutions. And of course, we've changed the names to protect the privacy of the individuals involved.
In today's case, we're going to call them John and Helen Stewart. John retired at age 62 with the early incentive package, but he also continued to work part-time because John wanted to get his full retirement benefits from Social Security. Likewise with his wife, Helen. She was an administrative assistant at a large defense contractor. She's now retired. They came in. John was age 65. Helen was age 64. Now, what they did prior to retirement, and this is something I encourage many of you to do. When the kids moved out, they sold the big house, and one of the things that they wanted in retirement, they wanted to downsize. Obviously, they didn't need a 3,000 square foot house with all the bedrooms when the kids were living at home. So what they wanted to do was downsize. They wanted to do traveling. They do a lot of things with their motorhome club. And so they wanted to be able to, you know, just lock the door, get in the motorhome, take off, not worry about cutting the lawn, watering the plants. And they didn't want to be worried or bothered with a mortgage payment. So one of the things they did is they sold their home a couple of years prior to retirement. And what they did is they bought a townhome and paid cash for it. So there was no mortgages, no mortgage payments. The only thing they had was the HOA fees and the property taxes. So their townhome in Escondido was worth roughly about $650,000. John's IRA rollover, about $550,000. Helen's IRA, $150,000. And about $100,000 they kept in the bank. So total assets were about $1,450,000, of which $800,000 was investments. Now, their budget, which included a lot of travel in their motorhome, it was $70,000 a year. Now, John's pension of roughly $3,500 a month, that was $42,000 a year. Helen's pension, a little over $1,300 a month, was about $16,000. So they had $58,000 coming in from pensions, but their budget was $70,000. And that's where John did part-time consulting. He was a management consultant. He was able to get contracts. His specialty, really coming out of the tire industry, is testifying in court cases and auto accidents. And you know, in this country, we sue. And you get a fender bender, it's a lawsuit. And so his expert was tires. And so he did a lot of part-time consulting. That brought in about $20,000 a year, bringing their income to $78,000. So covering their fixed income. Now, the idea was going to be work part-time until John was old enough to get full retirement benefits, and then his Social Security would basically replace what he was doing with consulting. So at age 66, John will get $23,000 a year in Social Security. At age 66, Helen will get $1,200 a year in Social Security. That'll be roughly $14,400. So Social Security income was $37,400. So the plan was both would wait until age 66 to get full retirement benefits, because the longer they waited, the benefit would go up 8% a year. Not too many people making 8% a year in this market. Not too many people making 8% in fixed income or getting 8% pay raises. So the idea was, so by 2017, both John and Helen would both be age 66. They would have $37,400, roughly 37 grand, coming in a year. So phase two would be allow their IRAs to accumulate to age 70 and a half, because at age 70 and a half, folks, the government comes in and says, guess what? You have to take a certain amount of income that goes up each year. So allow those IRAs to accumulate. John's in the year 2019, he would have to begin mandatory distributions from his IRA. Helen in the year 2021. So the plan was the next source of future income, which they don't need currently, they were going to allow it to accumulate, would be the IRA, and allow it to accumulate to age 70 and a half for both of them, at which time they would be required to take additional income. But basically, what they were doing in this strategy was trying to maximize full retirement benefits. Now, what they did something really smart. When the kids moved out, they no longer needed the big house, and they sold it just prior to the downturn in housing, which was kind of nice. So they were able to take that equity, pay cash for a townhouse. And one of the reasons they wanted the townhouse is because one of their ways of travel was in their motorhome. And when you're off in your motorhome, that means somebody isn't watering the lawn, cutting the lawn, messing around, taking care of a pool. So the townhouse made a lot of sense, and they wanted it free and clear. So that was one of the things they did prior to seeing us. So it had a couple phases. It really evolved around getting full retirement benefits for both John and Helen from Social Security. And then what we did is basically we encouraged that also for Helen. We also encouraged the investment portfolio that would create a nice mix for inflation and make that grow. And then also encouraged Helen to also wait till she got full retirement age, because they really didn't need it. They didn't have to draw with the income they had coming in from John's Social Security.
Okay, how was this plan invested, Jim?
You know, they were pretty comfortable with dividend-paying stocks. They had invested in stock funds in their 401k plans. Yes, they went through the dips as well as the upside on the market, but they saw stocks come back. And so we did about a 50-50 split, John, laddered bonds, because we wanted a certain degree of lower volatility, reduced risk, high dividend-paying stocks like utilities, consumer staples, big energy companies. So at age 70, theoretically, with a, let's say a 6% return in the market, those IRAs would be theoretically at that time about $1 million. At a 4% distribution rate, that'd be about $40,000 a year. You add Social Security at $37,400. And then also John and Helen's pension of $42,000 at age 70, their income was going to be $119,000. Granted, we're going to have some inflation between now and then, but it's unlikely a $70,000 budget is going to be going for $119,000. Let's say at year 2021, when Helen would be taking out required income from her IRA. So here was a case of taking their retirement in different phases. The key here was maximizing full retirement benefits from Social Security, which John was able to do by working part-time until he got his Social Security, in which case that would replace his consulting income, and then allowing Helen, she wouldn't need to draw on hers until she turned age 66, and she would get her full retirement benefits, roughly about a little over $1,300 a month, which between them would be almost $37,000 of income from Social Security. To give you an idea, folks, in today's market, you would need almost $1.3 million to earn $37,400 in Social Security. In a low interest rate environment, the real strategy here was maximizing Social Security benefits.
So this was a very successful strategy of maximizing government benefits, and it did work. And Jim, if people would like to contact you about retirement planning, how can they do that?
They can call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to talk to you about devising your own retirement plan. You know, you talk to people like us, find and develop a plan, folks. You will find you will navigate markets much more successfully and less fearful. Think of taking a trip. You have GPS in your car. All right, you got starting point A and finish line is B, retirement. You plug that into your GPS, it tells you how to get there. Same thing with a retirement plan. Don't procrastinate. You'll regret it if you do.
And coming up next, Yolanda York from Social Security, important changes in 2015.
Social Security has played a major part in individuals' retirement. The laws have changed over time, benefits have increased, along with tax and caps. Joining us on the program today is Yolanda York. She's Social Security Administration Public Affairs Specialist. And Yolanda, just before we get into some specifics here, I wonder if we can talk about a couple things that have just gone into effect that have been announced for 2015. The increase in terms of checks, the higher tax cap and earnings limit. Could you briefly touch upon those, please?
Yes, so as of October 22nd, they announced the 1.7% benefit increase for 2015. That kind of amounts to about $20 more per person of your Social Security benefits. And the maximum table of earnings, that has gone from $117,000 this year to next year, 2015, $118,500.
And then also, I think, didn't Yolanda, they increase the amount of earnings before you might lose benefits under age 66? Was that raised as well?
That was raised as well. And the earnings limitation for next year, so if you are under full retirement age, which is 66, you're allowed to earn $15,720 in wages or self-employment and still get all of your Social Security benefits. Of course, if you're full retirement age, it's unlimited earnings from the month you become full retirement age. So the month you become 66, then you have unlimited earnings.
And that was something that went into effect, I think, at the beginning of the last decade. Because I know, Yolanda, there used to be two different earnings caps, like from age 62 to 65, and then it was from 65 to 70. So all that's been eliminated if you wait until full retirement age, in this case, for most boomers, is age 66.
Yes, at 66, unlimited earnings. And, you know, I'm so glad you're asking these questions, because if you go to our website, www.socialsecurity.gov, right now you can pull the fact sheet of Social Security and you will have at your fingertips all of these 2015 Social Security changes. And there's quite a bit of information here, like also the maximum Social Security benefit that individuals can receive in 2015, which is $2,663. So if you become full retirement age, In 2015, the most you could possibly get is $2,663 at full retirement age. So there's so many great pieces of information that I think your listeners would really benefit from just looking at the fact sheet at socialsecurity.gov.
You know, Yolanda, as we get to the end of this interview, I want to give a big plug for your website and how easy it is for individuals that are applying for Social Security. It's actually much more efficient to do it online than go down and stand in line, take a number at a local office. Yeah, we'll get to that later on. I want to talk about a couple things that many of our listeners might not be aware of, and that's the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset. So let's talk about that. How do those two work and how do they affect Social Security recipients?
Well, the windfall elimination provision only affects those individuals who have paid into Social Security and let's say have their 40 credits, but might have worked in their younger years and currently they do not pay into Social Security, maybe because they're a teacher or they're a safety officer, they're a judge. There's lots of professions out there where they do not pay into Social Security, but they might have in the past. Those would be the individuals that would have this windfall elimination provision. And in a nutshell, let me just tell you why there is an offset to begin with. We take at Social Security the high 35 years of your lifetime earnings. We apply a formula and then determine the monthly benefit. And Social Security is exactly that. It's a social program. So when people are compensated for their benefits that they're going to get, it's at different ratios. So someone who is very, very poor gets a 55% return on their pre-retirement earnings. An average employee, such as myself, you, we probably get a 41% return on our Social Security benefits. A wealthy individual, such as Bill Gates or Oprah Winfrey, they get a 25% return on their pre-retirement earnings. So when we look at this teacher or safety officer as an example, we see that they had 10 years and lots of 0 years. So then Social Security says, oh, we need to compensate this individual. They're a very poor individual. So they get that 55% return. When they come and apply at Social Security, there's two questions we will ask you. Were you covered by another pension that wasn't covered under Social Security? And if you say yes, we ask you then, how much is your monthly benefit? And you may say, oh, it's, you know, $5,000 a month. So then we put this information on the system and we take you from that 55% bracket down to the 41%, which is what the average employee should be getting. And that causes the windfall elimination provision. And I just want to say, the most an individual could be reduced today in 2014 is $408. So for all these folks that may be listening and are a teacher or, you know, not paying into Social Security, if you currently have an estimate from Social Security that's $700 or more, the most you could be reduced would be $408.
Okay.
And if you continue to work now and pay into Social Security, and you have substantial earnings, which this year is about $21,000, you could eventually wipe that off of your record if you have 30 years or more paid under Social Security.
I want to move on to spousal benefits, because you do have situations where maybe a spouse did not quite work 40 quarters to get full benefits, or maybe did not work at all. Maybe it was a stay-at-home mom. I know my mother growing up, she was a stay-at-home mom. She never worked. So let's talk about spousal benefits of, let's say, a married couple.
That's right. Social Security does pay spousal benefits. So if you as a spouse are not insured, you can be eligible to receive 50% of the unreduced benefit from your husband or wife or same-sex partner. You can get 50% at full retirement age. If you decide to take it at 62, then it's 37%. It's reduced the younger you take the benefit. So 62 to 66, there's a different rate. And then that spouse, eventually, if your spouse dies, you can get up to 100% of what your spouse was receiving.
So just to clarify for our listeners, let's take a couple. Husband age 66, wife is, in this case, let's say age 62. Husband retires, he's now at full retirement age. He's getting his 100% of his Social Security benefits. Let's take the case, his wife age 62 never worked and paid into Social Security. Would she be eligible, let's say at age 62, 37% of his benefits?
Correct. That's exactly right.
Okay, so even though she did not pay in the system, she would receive a Social Security benefit. And let's clarify this too. Let's take that same case, go out another 5 years, husband passes away. Could she trade her 37% Social Security benefit for the 100% benefit of her husband?
I'm glad you asked that question. She can trade it in for 82% because the only way she will ever get 100 would have been had she waited till 66. If she had started collecting benefits as a spouse at 66, then yes, in turn, she would inherit 100% of the deceased benefits. So if you take it early, you will always suffer a reduction.
I want to talk about something, and we're seeing this more in retirement planning today. Because of today's historically low interest rates, we're seeing boomers, for example, delay retirement as one option. Number two, maybe they're working part-time. And let's say I'm age 66 and, you know, the company gives me some kind of pension or something like that that I can get along, but I'm working part-time. Let's talk about the advantage of, let's say, deferring taking Social Security at age 66, the increase in benefits of, let's say, waiting to age 70. How much does Social Security go up for each year you delay it?
It goes up 8% more per year. So if you start collecting it at age 7, now you would get 132% of your benefits if you delay to take it. And the advantage of doing that as well is that, let's say you are married, and if you make the strategic move, then your widow, when you pass, will inherit that 132% of benefit.
And you know, in today's market where yields are low, that can be somewhat significant.
I would love to just share something that just happened this Thursday. I had a woman who's a nurse. She's 66. She's going to continue to work till 70 because she wants to get maximum benefit. Her husband happens to be 70 years of age. So she says, no, I don't want to take my benefits until I become 70, you know, to gain this 132. And I said, but why don't you take 50% of your husband? So she said, I can do that. I said, absolutely. 50% of her husband's benefit is going to give her $1,250 a month.
Wow.
Times 48 months. That's $60,000 that she wasn't planning on receiving. And then at 70, she's going to switch over to hers. And so that's kind of another way for husbands and wives to maximize and strategically plan what's best for you. And I will give you a great tip. There's a handbook that Social Security has, and it's called What Every Woman Should Know. If you read page 13 and 14, you will find that this may be something you might want to consider because this woman is so happy that, you know, she's coming up with $60,000 for the future here.
You know, that's a great, great tip because here she was thinking, well, I won't take it to age 70. And right now she can take 50% of her husband's benefit at age 70 and then switch over to full benefit for herself at age 70. That's a significant amount of money, Yolanda.
It's huge. And, you know, from all of these strategies that I've been putting out there, I can tell you in the last 6 months, those amounts have ranged from $32,000 to $60,000. For individuals, you know, because the numbers just happen to play out for them and the situation. But you definitely need to think twice. When do I want to start collecting Social Security? You need to plan well. And I think you said it quite well. If you really don't need the money from Social Security, you might just consider letting it build and grow for you.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, it goes up 8% a year until age 70. Yolanda, I don't know of too many people that are getting 8% pay increases or seeing 8% increases in their portfolio each year. So that's not a bad strategy, which brings up another question. And that is, let's talk about some retirement strategies that could help our listeners. The one that you just mentioned, you know, here was a woman whose husband was age 70 and she's thinking, I'm age 66. I might as well work another 4 years, delay receiving benefits. And in this case, she is now eligible for 50% of her husband's benefit. And then at age 70, she switches over. She gets 100% of her benefit.
132.
Yeah, 132. So, I mean, that's big. So what other common strategies do you see that work out well for?
I can share another one.
Sure, yeah. As many as you want to share. I'm sure our listeners would like to hear them all.
Well, here's one. This is kind of typical of most couples. The wife is 62, he's 66, and he said, I am going to wait till I'm 70 to collect 132%. And I said to him, well, why don't you collect 50% of your wife? She's already applied. You know, she's getting $1,200 a month. That's what the wife is getting. And he says, what? I can get benefits on her? And I said, yeah. So because he's not collecting his, he can get 50%, so 50% of 1200, he's going to get $600 a month until 70. That's 48 months. That's $28,800 that he got a big surprise that he didn't know. And that's, again, on what every woman should know. That's kind of ways of strategizing couples' benefits.
I hope if you're listening to this, folks, that you go to the Social Security website, and especially you women out there, and do download What Every Woman Should Know, because you just mentioned a case where a wife could collect on her husband, start receiving 50% of his benefit, and then get 132% of hers at age 70. And then you just mentioned a case where a wife starts collecting hers at age 62. Husband could get 50% of her benefit and then wait and get his full benefit at age 66.
And if you've had a former marriage, you can also bring that to the table, because let's say you're single now and you're 66 and your ex-spouse, which you have to have a 10-year marriage duration to plan this out, you can always go back to a previous spouse and say, hey, let me see if I can collect on my former spouse who's now 63. You're going to wait till 70. And, you know, you can also look at those options.
I do know that one trend, and it's been well documented in studies in the Wall Street Journal, where because of interest rates today, because of two bear markets in the last decade, because of the slump in housing, a lot of couples or individuals thought, well, you know, instead of age 62, what they're doing is postponing. You know, Londa, I had a doctor who at age 65 retired and decided to allow his pension and IRA assets to accumulate. And he worked part time to age 70 and a half when he had to take mandatory distributions. But in that period of time, he was banking his Social Security at age 66 when he applied for that. He didn't use it because he was saving it because he was working. So there are a number of strategies that you can use to maximize your benefits that really, I think, can be very important, especially when you get into the 70s, where we tend to run into higher medical expenses and other things, that these are some great ideas. You have a section on what every woman should know. What about what every man should know?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Yes, it's called Understanding the Benefits. So go to our website and get this publication. Actually, that's my second favorite one. It's Understanding the Benefits. And I think you will get a good perspective on what we have available for you. And on our website, I mean, if you go, you can just click on information board. We have information for kids and families, same-sex couples, veterans, wounded warriors. As you know, Jim, you and I have worked quite a long time, and you know that we also bend over backwards to provide military disabled service members their Social Security disability while they're in the service. So that information is there. But yes, information for anyone. We have people, African Americans, and you name it, we have it on our website. And it's really tailored to your demographics as well. So come and check us out at socialsecurity.gov.
So two key documents here, and I want to make sure our listeners write this down. One of them, and if you're a man, and let's say even if you're collecting Social Security now, it's called Understanding the Benefits. That's a document I want you to download, read, understand. It's all explained there. And if you're a spouse, a single woman, I want you to download What Every Woman Should Know, and especially pages 13 and 14. What are the other type of things that you think, Yolanda, that people just aren't aware of? You mentioned a couple of them here. I mean, one of the things that really surprised me a number of years ago is when the law was passed on Social Security that you could work to age 66, and if you held off getting your benefits, you could work afterwards and not lose any of your benefits. That was such a major change, because for decades, Yolanda, we ran into that problem. You really did have to wait to age 65 or whatever the retirement age is, because if you worked part-time, you stood the chance of losing some of your benefits.
Right. And that's really a great benefit to individuals. And another thing for people to realize, is it worth it continuing to work while you're on Social Security? And the answer is absolutely yes. Not only are you out there, you know, enjoying the workforce again, but important is that your Social Security benefit may continue to grow. Because remember how I said we take the high 35 years of your lifetime earnings? If you have some 0 years or low years and your earnings now are considerably bigger than some of the years that we used, that will cause an automatic recomputation of benefits and your Social Security benefit will increase. So that's another benefit to working.
I want to talk about something that could be so easy for so many individuals. Okay, let's say you turn age 66, you're ready to apply for your Social Security benefits in Medicare. You can go down to the office, make an appointment, stand in line, take a number, and that could be a long day. Or you can go to your website in what, 15, 20 minutes?
Exactly, 17 minutes to apply for retirement online. If you just want to apply for Medicare, and by the way, Medicare, you still need to take it at 65. Medicare, it's a 12-minute application online.
12 minutes.
12 minutes. And, you know, the other thing about, you know, you coming into the office, another disadvantage is if you happen to come into a Wednesday and you didn't know, nationwide, all Social Security offices close at 12 o'clock on Wednesdays. The rest of the days were open from 9 to 3. So, you know, our hours are not very normal. But again, you could have saved yourself that trip, like you said, apply online.
It's kind of like online shopping. I can get in my car, drive to a shopping mall, find a parking spot, and then spend the day shopping. Or I can go online, click, and boom, it's delivered to my house. And what you're saying here, Yolanda, you know, making an appointment, standing in line, going through the paperwork versus 17 minutes online or 12 minutes for Medicare. It just makes more sense that you'd want to apply for your benefits online.
And since we're doing so many things online, I also want to caution, especially this October, it is Crime Prevention Month, and I just want to make sure everyone's aware. If you ever get an email from Social Security that says, hey, we need to verify your Social Security number and perhaps your bank account, or you get a call that is Social Security and we want to verify this information, please safeguard your information. Do not share anything with someone calling saying it's from Social Security. You know, we already know pretty much everything about you, so do not give us information on the phone because it's not our agency making those calls. So don't carry your Social Security card in your wallet either. Keep it at home in a safe place. You really don't need to have that card in your wallet to begin with.
Yeah, nobody asked to see your Social Security card, and most people probably have memorized their Social Security number. So folks, once again, if you get emails, and I've seen a lot of these, I've received one myself asking, hey, we need to verify this. And I go, you know, this is a scam. And I've had this done to me with my Apple account that, you know, all of a sudden iTunes wanted to verify. It really is somebody that's trying to get your vital financial information. So do go through the safeguards. Any final things that you would want to point out, Yolanda, that our listeners should be aware of?
I would say that if you haven't yet created a My Social Security on our website, socialsecurity.gov, My Social Security, this is the best tool we have right now. And I just love it. I know you're going to love it because if you haven't applied for Social Security yet, it will give you all the years that you paid into Social Security. It'll give you a monthly benefit of what your benefits will be in the future. And if you are receiving benefits, you can just go online and say, hey, send me an award letter, and you can print it on your computer. And we are talking about being safe on the internet, but socialsecurity.gov, if it's government, it's a secure site, it's encrypted. It's the same thing as you coming into my office and I'm getting this information for you. So as long as you're on our website, use the My Social Security, create that account, you know, just join the millions. We have so many people really benefiting from this link of creating an account, and it is so, so helpful. And for those of you who haven't yet, you will be pleasantly surprised to find out what Social Security has in store for you so you can better plan your future and use the retirement estimator calculators. So there is no surprises 10, 20 years down the road in realizing, oh, is this all I'm getting from Social Security? Because right now is the time where you can hire a financial advisor and be prepared. Social Security is not enough to live on.
So a couple of key things here as we close, Yolanda. The website is socialsecurity.gov. That's G-O-V. And then when you're on that site, you can go to My Social Security. Is that correct?
Exactly.
And then the two reports that you really want to get for you men listening to this program, understanding the benefits, and for you women, what every woman should know. Do yourself the favor. If you are 5 years away, 10 years away from Social Security or retirement age, and you're thinking, you know, what is my Social Security? Should I take it at age 62? Should I take it at age 66? And you have some good planning tools that address this that can help and assist individuals in arriving at or trying to make the correct Social Security decision.
Very good.
Yolanda, as always, I want to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Always some great information. Thanks for the 2015 update. And I want to wish you well and come back and talk to us again.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Well, this concludes this week's Lifetime Income. And I wanted to bring Yolanda back because there are a number of changes that sort of went into effect that was announced this week on Social Security. There are 5 Social Security changes that are coming into the next year. Bigger payments. You heard Yolanda talk about the 1.7% increase. Higher tax cap, meaning next year you'll pay Social Security and Medicare taxes on $118,500. That's up about $1,500. Social Security limits can go up to $15,720 in 2015 before you start giving up some your benefits. Your statement could be mailed in the mail, and the maximum benefit you can receive from Social Security for 2015 goes up to $2,663, up about $21 from the previous year. So I wanted to get those benefits out there. And folks, do yourself a favor. Really understand how your Social Security benefits work. Because Yolanda talked about a couple of cases there where one woman was going to wait to age 70 to get 132% of her Social Security benefits. And she found out she could get 50% of her husband's benefits, which were 132%, because he waited to age 70. And she could get those benefits for the next 4 years, and then at age 70, switch over to her own benefits of 132%. Or the case of the husband getting 50% of his wife's Social Security, waiting for age 66 for himself. So there are a lot of things that go into planning here. And the unfortunate thing is there's not a lot of planning that's done with Social Security. And a lot of times you can make decisions that are literally going to cost you tens of thousands of dollars during your lifetime. Well, I hope you found today's session of Lifetime Income helpful. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.